it hit me kind of hard, and I think it hit my brother kind of hard, too. My brother is Mark Kogan, who has a vast, vast number of stories from his days as a tour managing all sorts of bands. I remember, hi, Mark, how are you?
Oh, good.
Good.
Oh,
my brother and I went to the Old Town Art Fair yesterday for the, you know, we try to go every year. It's 75 years old, and we're almost up there, and it was, I thought it was boring, Mark, but we'll figure that out later. I remember seeing you, what year was it? You introduced the Beach Boys at what was called, and I still call it, Comiskey Park. What year was that?
Oh, well, that was 1979.
Wow.
Well, that's a great story, only because I actually started out earlier with them. It was called the Chicago Jam. And it was August 18th, and I think 19th, 17th, and 18th. It was put on by the guy, I think at one time was connected to the California Jam. And the Beach Boys opened the Chicago Jam, and the opening act was Blondie. So it was the Beach Boys and Blondie. However, it didn't sell very well in the 55,000-seat park. And, in fact, they sold, if I remember, 5,000 seats.
Oh, my God.
And,
wow.
And Mike Love
of the Beach Boys.
Came up to me and of the Beach Boys, and he said, hey, Kogan, can you go out to a store and get us 5,000 full-length mirrors and have people hold them up? It'll be like 10,000 people here.
Mike Love, some kind of odd genius. Is that the first time you? Is that the first time you encountered the Beach Boys?
No, I did a show in Iowa in '76, where they were doing. That was another strange one. That was when the Beach Boys were in. Some of the Beach Boys were into very macro diets. They had a blender that would mash up broccoli and everything, and I walked in toward the dressing room, and there was a guy named Cal, and he comes up and says, Mark, would you like a colonic? Because they actually carried a portable colon hydrotherapy machine.
But,
it was an adventure, it always was. The first time I ran into Brian, though, was sort of an interesting one. That was in Detroit at Olympia Stadium. And I walked into the sort of tented area that had, you know, drinks and food and others. There was Brian, and he was alone. He was off in a corner. He was basically, you know, smoking constantly, and he was also sort of repeating 13 years of my life, 13 years of my life. And I didn't really realize it until later that those – that's when he stopped touring 13 years before.
Wow.
And so he would come on a number of the dates, different times. I think there were times later on where he was on for a while. But he was on also when they had Dr. Amos Eugene Landy.
Oh, that guy.
He was there. Oh, my God. He was very, he isolated and protected Brian, but not really, when you think about it, protected. It was more secluded.
Yeah.
And, but the shows always were great. I mean, that great thing when you look at, you know, fun, 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 wouldn't it be nice? God only knows. You know, Brian really got as many songwriters like Dylan and others will say, he got a download of inspiration and everything. And even though he had a, you know, very troubled childhood with his, you know, brutal father and
talk to me about that. What you may know, I had forgotten that. I mean, that his two brothers, Carl and Dennis, were Beach Boys.
Carl and Dennis. Yeah, Murray wasn't out when I was on, but basically there would be all these hints about how really what a brutal, abusive father was he was to all of them.
Oh.
And especially to Brian. And when we were on the road, he wasn't on the road at that time. And they just, you know, they really had a fun, fun show despite their childhood.
Did he seem...
They carried a lot of the...
Did he seem off stage odd to you at all, or did he seem
he was very tentative sometimes in his movements, conversation. Brian would sometimes, you know, talk up a storm, and then other times he was very reserved. And you really didn't get to him. He wasn't on the road all the time either. You know, they have a great history with Chicago. Back in 1975, I think it was. It was called Beachago, Beach Boys in Chicago, and they played at the Chicago Stadium for 10 shows.
Wow,
which was incredibly popular. I wasn't on that. I in 77 when I was. Back at the stadium, they only did 2 shows, and I remember one of the bosses of Concerts West would say, you know, how come we only did 2 shows? Well, it didn't have the magic of having a back with Chicago. However, the show sold out, which they did with many shows. You know, there's a saying in life that nothing's more important than feeling good.
Yeah.
And you got to admit, almost every song of the Beach Boys made you feel pretty darn good. So,
now, yeah. You might know this. I haven't done enough. I've done some reading on it all. Are they? There's only one of them left alive, right?
No, all the brothers are gone. Dennis, I thought, well, that's another story.
Go ahead.
No, I was playing, I lived in L.A. for quite a while, and one of my bosses of Concerts West, a man named Terry Bassett, who sadly died a few years ago, but he and I were playing paddle tennis on Venice Beach, and Dennis walked by heading toward the marina or wherever he had his boat, and he was carrying it looked like a water jug, and he basically had orange juice. And I'm pretty sure it was vodka in it.
Wow.
And the sadness is that, you know, 2 weeks later, he drowned off of his boat. So, you know, he was a troubled soul, excellent drummer, but he was a mischief maker, sometimes on the tours, sometimes he and Mike Love did not get along well sometimes. But, you know, the whole interesting thing is some of the backstage drama never really, you know, was something you'd see on stage, except one time in Lakeland, Florida, the opening act was there, and Dennis was, you know, doing his mischief thing, and he jumped up on the piano of the other act and screamed out, "You are so beautiful," you know, Joe Cocker.
Yeah.
And Carl was really upset, and they had me get in a limo, one of the limos, and they were going to tell Dennis that Carl wasn't going to go on until he started to behave. So I had to take Carl a few miles away, and I got the backstage number and everything, and I had to call up so that Carl could get on and talk to Dennis. But I got on, and Dennis got angry with me, and he gave me one of his Manson's, "Kogan, you're a dead man." And then I said to Carl, "I'm not going to take that here." And I gave Carl the phone. But then again, what I'm saying is, while they were wacky sometimes, drama filled, they still performed incredible fun shows. And I think that's the key that, you know, most people should always focus on with the Beach Boys, I think, or any act.
Yeah, yeah. Well, would you notice that about other acts too, then? I mean, you're out with a lot of people. There could be chaos and nonsense and dysfunction off stage, but, you know, it's like John Barrymore always being drunk, and then he could sort of sober up the minute he hit the stage. Jeez, it's some legacy. You haven't been listening to much Beach Boys music, have you, and in sort of in honor of him?
No, it's just that they've been playing it everywhere, which is great. And I totally agree that, like Paul McCartney said and others, "God Only Knows" is one of my favorite songs, period, of all the songs that I've heard. And Carl, who sang that, was just a sweet, really good guy. Another interesting thing, his manager was Jerry Schilling, who was part of the Memphis Mafia.
Oh, wow.
When during the Elvis days. Oh. And Jerry also at one time was Billy Joel's tour manager.
God.
And so, you know, they eventually, and Brother Records in L.A., Jerry Schilling must have gotten her the job, but Michelle, Priscilla Presley's sister, worked at Brother Records.
Oh, my God. All tied together, man. Wow. I'm going to read something that a friend of mine wrote, some Substack thing, a great journalist named Charles Madigan. Listen to this, Mark. It's only a couple pages, and tell me what you think.
Sure.
Let's take a commercial. Can you hold for through a commercial? Yeah.
Sure.
You're my brother. You can hold. Yeah. Stay on the phone. We'll get some commercials, and I want to read you this thing. Could there be a summer without the Beach Boys? My best friend and I would take a little Sony tape player to his basement on afternoons when no one was home and sing together, always to the music of the Beach Boys. Our question was pretty simple. How the blank did you do that on songs like Good Vibrations and I Get Around? We could pull off some pretty good harmonies when the music was playing. The answer, of course, was Brian Wilson, who passed the other day. He had both a blessed and a difficult life, with maybe the best ear in rock and roll, but drug problems and a lifelong struggle with mental illness. We didn't know any of that at the time. All we knew was that he presented the perfect backdrop for any of the many shenanigans we pulled. There was no better music for cruising the downtown than the Beach Boys, even though the journey just meant driving around a few downtown blocks until you got bored or ran into girls who were somehow interested. This, of course, was what teenage boys cruising was all about in that innocent era. Wish They Could All Be California Girls is a great teen boy song, as we were unlikely to ever run into one in central Pennsylvania. It fueled fantasies about suntanned bodies and wavy hair and all the rest. I'm sorry his life was so hard that he once had his living room flooded with sand so he could sit at his piano. We all have our peculiarities, but we don't leave behind such a great musical legacy. Isn't that nice, Mark?
Wonderful.
Yeah. That's Charlie Madigan. Thank you for coming on. Stay on so you can listen, as I will, right now to that song that Paul McCartney literally has said many, many times. I'm sure he said it yesterday. Is the greatest song ever written, and that's pretty high praise, I will tell you.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole thing, that no matter how crazy it was personally with all of them, to this day, music is all about whatever makes your heart sing.
Yep.
And it sure does with the Beach Boys and all the other acts.
Also, you know, we're missing the other guy who died this week was Sly Stone too, who's an incredibly influential, and also, you know, came to a kind of sad end. I mean, it's not exclusive to creative people that they all wind up, drug addled or suicidal or anything. But he too was. The New York Times called them both, and I think this is a really cool phrase. They called them not only powerful visionaries, but architects of joy. Don't you think that's great?
Yep, totally. I mean, music brings up joy, happiness,
yeah,
memories, the past, present, hope for the future, and about life.
It can take you back. It can take you back in time. Mark, my great engineer here, Crystal Flores, wants you to write a book about all of your experience. She wants you to come. I think we should do this. She wants you, and I'm sure a lot of listeners do too, would like you to come in for an entire 2-hour after-hours show and just talk music and the road, man, because the people we know are the soundtrack of our life, man. Think about doing that. I'll even pay you.
Maybe when I get back from speaking at Elvis Week in August.
Legends in concert. Thanks a million, Mark. I'll see you soon.
All right, bro.
All right, honey.
Talk to you.
Take care. That's right. He can't come in right now because he's got to go to Australia with the Legends in Concert thing to manage fake dead people like Elvis and Janis, and oh my God, He has had a very, very, very interesting life.